Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show today, live from the green space here at 160 Varick Street on the ground floor at the WNYC Studios. Thanks to all of you for coming today to the green space, and thanks to everybody for listening. Closing arguments in the Bridgegate trial are underway, as confirmed moments ago by Richard Haake. Following a mystery adjournment for a day yesterday and several days of testimony from one of the two defendants in the case, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Chris Christie, Bridget Ann Kelly, who sent the infamous email, "Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee," followed by another one, "Is it wrong that I'm smiling?" Her testimony was consistent with what much of her what her co-defendant said, former Deputy Executive Director of the Port Authority, Bill Baroni, and the prosecution's star witness, David Wildstein. He also claimed about Governor Chris Christie having advanced knowledge of the plan to close the access lanes to the George Washington Bridge. But Kelly's headline testimony was that both she and the governor believed it was actually a traffic study, not political payback to the mayor of Fort Lee for not endorsing Christie for reelection. Please welcome to the green space, excuse me, two-thirds of our Bridgegate reporting team, one here in person, one via Skype from an undisclosed location, just in case something happens to the other two. New Jersey Public Radio reporter Matt Katz is on via Skype. Hi, Matt.
Hi there, Brian. Hi, everyone.
And managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, Nancy Solomon, is here with us in the green space. Matt is also the author of the book, American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Please welcome Nancy Solomon to our stage.
Thank you.
And the other third of this team, Andrea Bernstein, is in court because, Nancy, somebody has to do it.
Somebody has to do it. Today's closing arguments.
And do you have any report yet, or is it too early?
I think it's too early. I mean, we do know that the delay yesterday, we now know what caused that and what the result was. The defense attorneys had asked for a mistrial based on the wrong time stamping of some of the emails that didn't account for daylight savings time. And that request was denied by the judge. So we're on to closing statements, which will be today and Monday.
Say that again about daylight savings time.
Matt, you want to jump in?
Yeah, this was on text messages. Now, these text messages are like the critical piece of evidence in this trial. And Bill Baroni, one of the defendants, his attorney said that the timestamps were incorrect because the prosecution in presenting them did not account for daylight savings time. I cannot imagine this would have great bearing on what becomes of Bill Baroni, but the judge did deny it, so it's a moot point. We're just delayed one day. Closing arguments began with the prosecutor today. We've got some reports already about what's being said in the courtroom. The prosecutor, Lee Cortez, he said, "Let's be clear, there was never an intent to conduct a real traffic study." And that really is what this whole thing boils down to. It was not a real traffic study. That's what the prosecution is saying, that this argument that the defendants are using, that they just closed the lanes in order to follow through on a study about lanes and traffic at the George Washington Bridge, is totally bogus, the prosecution says. And it was all about, quote, furthering Chris Christie and his political career.
So is this just he said, he said, he said, she said, Nancy, with respect to the purpose of the traffic study? Because this was, I think, the first time that we heard this from anybody in Bridget Ann Kelly's testimony, that she actually thought that this was a traffic study to see if even though they would cause some traffic problems temporarily in Fort Lee, that things would be better for everybody in the long run by closing off those lanes because they choke the traffic to the people coming in on the highway. I mean, is there any credibility to that story?
Well, there's a little bit of credibility. I mean, one thing that, first of all, we know there was no traffic study, and we've known that since November of 2013 when the executive director of the Port Authority testified before the New Jersey legislature that there was no traffic study. So we know there was no legitimate traffic study, and the traffic studies are not done in that way. They don't just throw up some cones and see what happens. So, but the question comes down, when you get to the he said, she said, the question comes down to what was the perception of Bridget Ann Kelly and Bill Baroni? Were they manipulated by David Wildstein?
Was that her testimony? Like, Wildstein was concocting this political plot on behalf of the governor and he pulled the wool over my eyes?
Basically.
Or conducting this political plot on behalf of the governor without the governor's knowledge, but trying to help him politically in his reelection, and therefore he gave Bridget Ann Kelly a story, and she passed that false story on to the governor, and that was the only way he heard it. I mean, we would have to believe all of that, right?
There's a parallel universe in which David Wildstein, who I think it is true that he was somewhat obsessed with the unfairness that the town of Fort Lee has local lanes access onto the bridge, and that somehow that, you know, and that he wanted to use that. There was testimony earlier by him that he had been thinking about this and wanting to use that as a political tool early on in the governor's term. And so there is an alternate universe in which he wants to muck with traffic, and then he wants to bring Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo out to the bridge and hold a press conference and announce that they've got all these problems, all this backup in Fort Lee, all this mess. They're going to clean it up. They're going to fix it. And in the end, traffic is going to move better on the turnpike because they're going to realign these lanes and change it. So there is, and this is something that Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo did with the toll hikes over the bridges and the tunnel, when they proposed huge toll hikes, and then acted surprised that the Port Authority would suggest such a thing and came out and announced, no, we're going to cut those toll hikes in half. So we still got a whopping big toll hike, but they were the heroes. So there is some background to believe that they could concoct something like this, but you know, there's also just, there was so many rewards and punishments going on that were organized by the office that Bridget Ann Kelly led. So I think there's a lot to suggest that there was an understanding of some punishment going on too.
She is also saying, though, that she got approval from the governor. She got an okay from the governor. She is saying that she knew about this traffic study, obviously. She did not know it was politically motivated. And she told the governor about it before it started, and then twice while it was happening. During those 5 days of traffic, she told him twice, she says. And he said, that's fine. And his response each time was, let Wildstein handle it, which indicates, and that this is the point that the defense is trying to make, that the governor was obviously in on this and, you know, using these intermediaries, these lower level intermediaries, to do the dirty work.
And this, of course, would contradict something that Governor Christie has said many times in public. For example, this instance where he talked about directing, once the plot became known, directing any staff with knowledge of the closures to speak right away with his chief of staff, Kevin O'Dowd, and his chief counsel, Charlie McKenna.
Right. Bridget Kelly says she spoke to her boss, who is chief of staff, Kevin O'Dowd, several times, even showed him emails indicating her awareness of this. And she also said that she deleted emails once this was happening and even told Kevin O'Dowd, a former federal prosecutor under Christie, that she had been deleting emails. And there's other testimony from other Christie aides indicating that they also told the governor that Bridget Kelly and David Wildstein were aware of this whole situation long before Christie said that he had no inkling of that anything amiss was going on. There was a ton of testimony that Christie was aware that something went awry here and was involved in the cover-up. And there is some testimony indicating that he knew even before this whole scheme began.
Matt, how did they account for the other Bridget Kelly email? If this is a story that we were just going over about why she wrote time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, what about when she wrote, is it wrong that I'm smiling?
That is a tough one. And if she's convicted, that's going to be on the minds of jurors. She said that her understanding was this traffic study was going to ease traffic on the George Washington Bridge from the main approach from the turnpike. And that was a good thing. And already during this fake study, when they did close these lanes, actually traffic eased up on the main approach. So she found this out and was happy about this because she said Wildstein's grand plan was for there to be a press conference between Andrew Cuomo and Chris Christie, where they could both talk about how their Port Authority alleviated traffic at the George Washington Bridge. So she is happy about that, but she's upset. So she says, is it wrong that I'm smiling? And that smiling piece is about how she's happy that the governor is going to have something good is going to come out of it. Mm. But she's also knows that there's going to be kids who are stuck in school buses, and that she said bothered her even then, although you wouldn't be able to tell that from her correspondence.
I think the interesting thing to note here is that the defense team has effectively injected some reasonable doubt into whether she understood that this was a political retaliation to Mark Sokolich for not endorsing the governor. And, you know, so there was an interesting legal point that happened the other day when the judge gave her instructions to the jury about whether or not the jury needs to find that this was a retaliation scheme to find the defendants guilty. And I think this is where the evidence really is the most squidgy, is that we have the testimony of Wildstein, the guy who was doing it, saying it was a retaliation scheme. And we have evidence of other retaliation schemes. And a entire state government, the administration is focused around the reelection and the rewards and punishments of who is supporting and who isn't supporting Governor Christie.
Of course, Wildstein, though he was the one doing it, only said that this was a retaliation scheme in the context of taking a plea deal to get a reduced sentence, right?
Yeah, he could, you know, but yeah, that would be the only motivation for him to lie about this.
Right.
Bridget Kelly's lawyer is very good, and he's done a very good job of injecting some doubt about whether she knew that it was a retaliation scheme. But, you know, and that, Matt, we could talk about. I mean, the fact is, there's quite a bit of evidence about what her office at the governor's office was doing, and the fact that after Bridgegate, they closed the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs because they could see, you know, they were caught, and it was a political campaign office right in the State House.
Before we step back and look at the bigger picture a little bit, in one other notable moment from Bridget Ann Kelly's testimony, Matt, she fought back tears as she described an instance in which an irate Christie threw a water bottle at her, hitting her arm because he didn't like her idea for a public event. Did she say what her violence-inducing event idea was?
Yes, this was almost a year after Sandy, and the Seaside Heights Boardwalk was burning. They had just rebuilt the boardwalk, and there's a big fire now in Seaside Heights. They just rebuilt it from the storm, and now there's this fire. And Christie apparently gets a text message from Brian Williams, of all people. Brian Williams had done an interview with Christie at Seaside, and Christie likes to text with famous media types, more famous than me.
And he said and he got caught in the traffic on the bridge, and he was being shot at the time. I'm kidding.
Right, exactly right. Very Brian Williams of him. Williams texts Christie and says, come to Seaside. You got to come to Seaside. Big fire. So Christie turns to Kelly, Bridget, get in the car. We're going to Seaside. They rush to Seaside, sort of a stressful scene. Christie vacationed at Seaside as a kid, so maybe he was feeling a bit emotional. While they're there, Bridget, who's in charge of local mayors, and she's kind of a liaison between the governor's office and local officials, she tells the governor that, you know, I think you should introduce this person and this person and this person, and then you can make your remarks. I think that would be a good way of handling this public event we're going to have about the fire. And Christie throws a water bottle at her, she says, and asks her, what do you think I am, a expletive game show host. And he didn't really like her idea for this public event. And this was brought up. The reason why this came up, other than the fact that it seems like everybody in the courtroom wants to make Christie look as bad as possible, it was brought up because the part of the defense's legal strategy is to show that she was scared of the governor and scared of his people, and therefore she was just doing as she was told and was not trying to ask too many questions and deleted emails when she thought she needed to cover her tracks to protect the governor. She describes what really amounts to something of an abusive work relationship with the governor of New Jersey.
Anybody here in the green space have a Bridgegate question that you've always wanted to ask? If you do, raise your hand and a producer will come around with a microphone. But in the meantime, the defense is not out to get Christie, but it's in their interest to make it look like he knew a lot. The prosecution has the same interest, funny enough. And there's now a separate criminal official misconduct summons against the governor in Hackensack that prosecutors are mulling over in regards to whether to bring charges against Christie. Can you explain this, Nancy? Is this an outgrowth of the testimony in this trial?
Yes. Yes, it is. So this is a citizen, a resident of Bergen County, has filed a citizen's complaint, a criminal citizen's complaint against Governor Christie. He bases it on the testimony of David Wildstein. So basically, charging him with official misconduct, which is, I mean, I think that much of it is legitimate. I mean, it is the use of government resources for purposes that they are not intended to be used for, and the fact that the governor and his top aides knew about this and didn't immediately step in and say, we've got a problem here, we've got to rectify this. Let's remember, it happened the week of 9/11, and we went all through September, all through October, all through November. There are cracks in the story start to appear in November when the legislature starts holding hearings. Meanwhile, they've been denying there's anything untoward going on. And it's not till time for some traffic problems when it's linked to the governor's office that now we get a mea culpa.
Which wasn't until the following January, right?
Right. And yes, exactly. So I think, there is a legitimate claim that you could say that's official misconduct, that they were not, operating government for the people in our best interest. They were doing something quite different.
Matt, to take a step back, there's a theory of everything here, which I think you subscribe to, that the reason Christie would have had his people pressure a Democrat who was mayor of Fort Lee so hard to endorse him for a reelection bid that it looked like he was going to win easily anyway had something to do with his presidential ambitions. Yes?
Had everything to do with his presidential ambitions. Chris Christie's plan was to run for president in 2016 as a Big Tent Republican. It sounds totally bizarre in the context of this election, but he was going to run as a candidate who would not just succeed on his own, but also save the Republican Party by bringing in blacks, Hispanics, independents, and women into the fold. He wanted to win as many Democrats as possible, in order to get minority voters, and in that sense, he succeeded. He got 51% of the Hispanic vote, which is just incredible in the context of this election as a Republican. And B, he also wanted to have all these images of him standing with Democrats. Almost all of the campaign events he had in 2013 for his reelection were him standing with Democrats who were endorsing him, elected Democrats who were endorsing him. He wanted to portray a bipartisan image. I am going to go to Washington and be able to work across the aisle. I'm going to have Nancy Pelosi over for drinks. I know how to deal with these people and still, keep true to my conservative principles. That was the whole plan going forward. The people who were running this operation trying to get Democratic endorsements were the very same people who were going to be running his presidential campaign. And then, of course, Bridgegate just exploded all of that. And he ended up running a very, very different presidential campaign. He ran a presidential campaign where he talked about tracking illegal immigrants from South America like FedEx packages. He talked about rejecting orphaned two-year-olds from Syria who come as refugees because they might grow up to be terrorists. And it changed the trajectory of, obviously, his political career, but maybe the whole path of the Republican Party.
And maybe he had the funniest moment of the entire primary season when he looked at Marco Rubio in that debate and he said, there you go again, the 25-second speech, the canned 25-second speech, which pretty much destroyed the Rubio campaign and was hilarious at the time.
We call it the murder-suicide.
Yeah, or the suicide bomber.
He took down Rubio, but he went down himself when he got down into the cellar with him. And, this has been really quite the knockout punch that we could have never anticipated, that he would go from just an incredible peak of popularity in New Jersey to where he stands now, really facing a very dark abyss of the end of his political career. And what you have is what Matt just laid out for you, and then, you know, that switch from moderate Republican and bipartisan Republican to a much more conservative Republican who then has to endorse Trump and stand behind him on that stage, as a New Jersey resident, that ended any pretense that he believed any of those things went right out the window. Like, how could he have believed any of the things he was before, given where he is now?
I think we have one question from an audience member here in the green space. Hi.
Hi. One name that I haven't heard in the Bridgegate context in a while is David Sampson, former chairman of the Port Authority with the chairman's
Just
flight. Saying
David Sampson is a laugh line for Nancy. You heard that.
Well, so, we've been asking why we haven't been hearing about David Sampson, but yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to find out where things stand with him and what possible consequences there are for him and what his connection could do for Christie in the future.
Yeah. Andrea Bernstein asked the prosecutor the other day, where's David Sampson in this? Why haven't we heard more testimony about him? Why haven't you put him on the stand? And the U.S. attorney said, haven't you got enough? I think that was the answer. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. But so, David Sampson has pleaded guilty to the United bribery scheme that resulted in the chairman's flight, which was his own personal route to his vacation home from United Airlines,
in exchange for favors for the airline.
Yes. And, I think the reporting and the witness testimony really clearly shows that he was involved in Bridgegate, that he was running, that he and Wildstein had the clearest communication lanes open to the governor, that they were the ones in power. And I mean, this, you're talking about someone who was very, very close with Governor Christie.
So one side or the other might have wanted to call him.
Right. But there's a lack of a paper trail with him in terms of Bridgegate. And the prosecution, the U.S. Attorney's Office, they have their case. They've decided, for whatever reason, they were going to go after Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni. I think, one of the big frustrations that, and this is why the question arises, where's David Sampson and all this, is you really get the sense in watching all of it, like, that the people, these folks might have been involved, but the people who were really in power are not on trial.
Mm-hmm. And so to wrap it up, as we run out of time, I'm going to put you both on the spot. Nobody bets anymore in New Jersey because, A, they don't want to visit Trump casinos anymore, and, B, everybody's saving up for the new price of gasoline. But if you had to place a bet, who do you think gets acquitted or convicted in this trial? Matt, are you willing to say?
Sure. I've been staring at these jurors for 6 weeks and trying to envision what they're thinking. And if I'm in their seats, what I think would happen is that Bill Baroni, because there's so much more documentary evidence against him, that he gets convicted. That would be my guess. And Bridget Kelly, because she strikes just a more sympathetic figure, a mother of four, with a single mother of four, which she has mentioned many times. She's cried. The way the courtroom is situated, she's facing the jury. They see her every day. I'm going to guess that she might walk out of the courtroom a free woman. That's my guess.
Nancy?
Oh, geez. You know, I haven't been sitting in the courtroom, so I would go with Matt if I were betting and actually putting my own dime on this. But I think, you know, from from all the testimony that I've read about from their work in the courtroom, you know, I think Bridget Kelly is culpable in this. I feel bad because I don't really feel like Bridget Kelly or Bill Baroni should go to jail, per se. I think... You know, so I think if I was sitting on the jury, I mean, that is one of the possibilities that we see, is that the jury feels bad for them and they might totally see that they were involved, but they don't want to send them to prison. So, and I guess, and that's, as a juror, I think that's what I would be feeling. Mm-hmm.
And Matt, last question, since you wrote the book, American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption, with respect to his future, do you think Christie wants the morning show or the evening show on Trump TV?
You know, I actually have been thinking recently, the only media he's been doing is on WFAN Sports Radio on their morning show. He fills in every couple of weeks for four-hour co-hosting. I feel like he's going to go to sports radio before he goes to the Trump TV.
Oh,
that's
boy.
My guess.
Matt Katz and Nancy Solomon, please thank them for joining us. Brian Lehrer in the green space today. The artist, Marina Abramović, next. Stay with us.